This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Legacy Foundation here in Northwest Indiana, and in Lake County in particular, is very busy with a number of projects, and we're going to find about more of them today. We have with us first to talk about the Farmers Markets, the lady who helps organize all of these. We have Donna Catalano, who's the Community Development Director for the Legacy Foundation, to talk about it, and Kelly Eno, who is with the executive team at the Legacy Foundation. It'll tell us more about the number of grants that are going out to help community organizations. And First Ladies, thanks for joining us here in the studio on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Thanks for having us, Chris.
Well, if you will, Donna, tell us a little bit about how summer's going with the farmers markets. That's a very big concern that I don't think many people realize. It's gotten so, at least over in LaPorte County, that they've had to get some help from the Purdue Extension to look into the problems of food insecurity in the in the community of Michigan City. Not that we don't have it here, but we seem to have better ways to deal with it. At least we're trying to.
Yeah, well, actually, Lake County has, I think, 27 food deserts. And so what we did was we applied for a grant from the USDA, and we partnered with Purdue Extension, Northwest Indiana Food Council, the City of East Chicago, and the Gary Food Council. And so what we did was we got a grant to take farmers markets into East Chicago and Gary, because in Gary alone there are 14 food deserts. Mm-hmm. And a food desert is described as where there's not a grocery store within a mile radius of a neighborhood. So you either have to use public transportation if it's available, and it's very difficult for people in those areas to get to fresh produce. So we got a grant. It's called the Farmers Market Promotion Program. And what we do is we try to establish or partner with current farmers markets and make SNAP available at farmers markets, so people can use their SNAP, which is their food stamp program, to purchase produce at these markets.
And for people that aren't familiar with what SNAP, that's the federal program, is commonly known as food stamps, although
it's been expanded long beyond that. It's a supplemental nutrition assistance program.
It's been expanded well beyond the food stamp program, certainly, yes. And it had to be during the pandemic, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And even this summer, we have the SNAP card, which is basic and families get, but there's also a summer SNAP card that a lot of the school kids got so that they can make sure that they eat through the summertime. So it's because food insecurity is so big, and especially in Lake County.
Well, you mentioned about the farmers markets that are being set up and running this summer in Gary and in East Chicago. Where do the organizers for those particular farmers markets get the produce that they are able to pass along to residents?
Well, we actually partner with a lot of urban farms. We have Para Farms. We have Bob's Backyard. We have a couple farmers that are very dedicated to doing this specific project, who want to get food and produce to people who don't have access. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of our big things. We have other vendors. We have Just Canning Around, where you can get canned products, there's cheese, there's eggs, there's all sorts of things that you can get at farmers markets that'll be eligible for SNAP.
Mm-hmm. When did most of the farmers markets get started for the summer months?
Most of them get started. They start going in May, because you can do lettuces and onions and things like that. We're getting into the real robust time is mid-July till September, where it's really your corns and your tomatoes and mm-hmm. things like that.
So. That sounds like those are the items that people really rely on to feed their family.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And it's so good. There's nothing better than something that is fresh and farm to table.
Besides the cooperation that you have with the local growers, do you have to work up with some arrangements as well with the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana to bring some things in that maybe that would be well to go for the farmers market?
The Food Bank does sit on our steering committee, but we don't use them for any food products at our markets. Mm-hmm. Ours are just simply fresh products that are brought in by farmers and vendors.
Mm-hmm. When you set up a program like this, and you work with these individual farmers and the farms that are out there where mm-hmm. people probably don't even realize there are urban farms around, you don't see them necessarily from the streets.
No, you'd be surprised. You can even take a ride around Aetna. There's a number of yards that have farms. There's the City Cultivators. There's Peace Farms. There's Mystic Farms. Those are all in Gary. In East Chicago, I'm not as familiar year because they didn't do much last year. We're just going to get in with them this year. We have a market tomorrow at the HealthLink Clinic on Chicago Avenue from 10 to 2. We have another market on Friday at AmVets from 2 to 6. And that's at Post 6 on Clark Road and 21st Avenue. And then we have a really fun event at Art House on Saturday from noon to 4 o'clock. There's going to be an ice cream social and a farmer's market, so it's a great time to come out. And then we partner with Miller Market right in downtown Miller on every Sunday from 11 to 1.
I guess people don't realize that there are many opportunities to be able to pick up fresh vegetables and fruits when they happen to come into the farmers markets and be able to feed families. And at least, if anything, if not a big family, they could probably certainly get enough to feed a big family, but probably to the average-sized family could take advantage of these too.
Well, and I'm working with a rental assistance for Lake County, and a lot of families have a limited amount of SNAP, but they do want to get good things with it. So we give them this opportunity.
Besides the farmers markets that are out there that you get to supervise, Kelly, and I know that you have a number of grants that you get to supervise in your job. Will you tell us first about one of the big ones that just recently been announced here from the Urban League of Northwest Indiana, where it's going and how that's coming along now?
Yeah, so we've been working with the Urban League on a number of initiatives over the past, for years, but more recently on. So there were two recent grants that we awarded to the Urban League. One was that they've been partnering with us on COVID vaccine promotion and awareness. And so we gave them funding to help support a campaign and marketing to help encourage people to get vaccinated. And if people come into the Urban League with proof of vaccination within a certain date range, then they will receive a $50 gift card to a grocery store. And so that's something that has been really successful in helping to encourage more people to get out and get vaccinated. And then we're also working with them right now on an inclusion, diversity, equity, and accessibility initiative to help nonprofits get trained in inclusion and diversity. And so any smaller nonprofits with budgets under $2 million, if they want to get their staff and board do a diversity training for their team, then they can fill out an application with Legacy, and we will work with the Urban League to help fund or to pay for their training for their staff and board.
I understand that maybe should mention as well that the Urban League's opportunities to get this COVID-19 vaccination campaign underway is through the entire month of July. I guess they started on the 1st and they go until the end of July. So this is going to be a rather far-reaching grant for them to be able to expand and get more people in the hopes of getting more people vaccinated in Gary.
Yeah, absolutely. First come, first serve, though. So there are not unlimited dollars. So if you want to get vaccinated and get that gift card, then make sure you do that now and bring it into the Urban League.
I understand the Legacy Foundation has a number of spring and summer Transform Lake County grants have gone out. Will you tell us more about those there, in particular, I guess, focusing on specific organizations?
Yeah, we had a lot of really great grant applications this spring for our Transform Lake County grant cycle. And especially as we are moving back to our traditional Transform Lake County grants, 2020 was a year of really the COVID emergency response, primarily funding. And so we were excited to move back into really what we focused on is strengthening quality of place in Lake County. And so some of the, you know, some really, I think, exciting projects is Whiting Public Library. We funded them to open up a library of things. And so this will go beyond books, but they can, so Whiting Public Library will be purchasing maybe tools and household items and different things, a wide variety of things that people can go to the library to check out. And so that'll be creating that library of things there. The Children's Museum of Indianapolis was funded to add, so Bella Booz is the latest Indiana Access Pass member. And so the funding, as the administrator for Indiana Access Pass, the grant went to the Indianapolis Children's Museum, but it's really to support Bellaboo's and Lake County Parks in helping to market, promote, and subsidize the reduced ticket prices for becoming an Indiana Access Pass member. And the goal with that will be to help attract people to come to Lake County to, you know, for tourism. They can go to the dunes, you know, spend a day out here in Lake County from anywhere in Indiana now, and, you know, go to the dunes, spend a day at Bellaboo's, go to the Mascot Hall of Fame while they're out here. So really making it a destination. And Lainey Fluellen Charities, so that is the Know Your Lemons campaign to help promote breast cancer awareness and education in high-risk women.
I know that the Legacy Foundation's Transform Lake County Grants program is a program that is for all sizes of communities. They don't have to be the bigger cities or just the smaller towns. They can be virtually any size community, I guess, as long as they apply for something that is going to benefit the residents of that particular community, right?
Right. So unlike maybe a larger corporate foundation who focuses on a specific area, such as environment or healthcare, our focus is quality of place. And so all of our grant funding through Transform Lake County is used to support Lake County. It's really the full spectrum of community size. So some of our grants might be just really on a block level, and then others are countywide. And it's looking at all issue areas impacting Lake County. And so we have grants that help environment, to seniors, to youth, to animals, so we really have the full spectrum.
Now, looking ahead past these the spring and summer grants that have just been handed out, what's the next round of grants that the Legacy Foundation is going to make available, and when can organizations apply for those?
So our next round of Transform Lake County grants will open on October 1st. Applications are due November 1st, and notifications will come out around mid-December for those grants.
Okay. Now, Donna, we haven't talked much beyond the summer farmers markets, but I'm sure there are some other programs that that you get to supervise that fit in with the idea of helping fight food insecurity and some of the other community development programs, too.
Well, our farmers markets go all the way through the end of September. Mm-hmm. And one of the markets we didn't mention was we partnered with Methodist Hospital North Lake Campus. And we do they do it twice a month on a Friday from 10 to 2. So that one's running all the way through September. So most of them do run through harvest season. The other program that we partnered with and we're a subcontractor for is the Lake County Emergency Rental Assistance Program, and that's been very robust. We Lake County received $14.5 million to assist renters with their rent, and you can get assistance for up to 12 months, whether that's counting your arrearage and going forward, but you can get up to 12 months assistance, and that's still with the CARES Act money, and that is still available and will be available probably through the end of September. So if anybody's interested, they can call Legacy Foundation and ask for me.
Are there any programs that are perhaps coming up under some of the newest programs that are still being reviewed by Congress coming from the White House, something along the lines of the CARES Act or some of the other ones that are still out there, that anything that the Legacy Foundation may possibly get as some of the recipients?
That's been really interesting, you know, for I think us and a number of other nonprofits and municipalities as we navigate how do we best deploy our funding in a way that will supplement and not duplicate all of these different funding that's coming through the pipeline, and how can we work with the local communities and county and even the region to make sure that we're all putting in the most competitive applications and building off of one another and what we're doing. And so Legacy Foundation has been working with the Northwest Indiana Forum and the cities across Lake County on collaborating and discussing how we can all put together a plan that makes the most sense, and then keeping an eye on the different application opportunities that are coming forth to make sure that we're all working together to apply and not competing against each other.
Well, that's probably the toughest thing right now, because there are lots of opportunities that are available, but there's so many other organizations that are out there vying for the opportunity to get some of the funds, and you want to be sure that, you're in the pipeline and everything does come in to be sure. So, well, ladies, thank you very much for spending time with the update on what the Legacy Foundation here in Lake County has been busy doing, not only with fighting food insecurity through the farmers markets that are open this summer into the fall months, but also the various grants going back to the Transform Lake County grants program that you mentioned earlier had to be set aside because of the pandemic, and more funds will be coming available. Thank you for spending time with us to talk about today.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yeah. Donna Catalano is the Community Development Director, and Kelly Enos on the executive team of the Legacy Foundation, which is Lake County's community foundation. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. The Portage City Council is considering a ban on smoking in public places in the city. The Tobacco Education and Prevention Coalition for Porter County has been trying to help this initiative pass, and it's even gotten the signatures of six CEOs of the six regional hospitals who serve the city to sign a joint letter publicly supporting the smoke-free air ordinance. Lakeshore Public Radio's Sharon Jackson spoke recently with Carrie Higgins, who's the program director for the Tobacco Education and Prevention Coalition, about the effort.
Talking about, you know, in relevance to the policy that you guys are working on right now, the City of Portage policy, tell me about that policy and when it is going to be decided upon.
Well, we're not exactly sure exactly when it's going to be decided upon. It had its first reading in the June meeting. You know, they had some city council members that were in support of it, and that they have to, it's their ordinance, then it becomes their ordinance, and, you know, they would have to sign it, not us, and their attorneys are on it, and, you know, the mayor. So it really becomes then their document that we don't have any control over at that point. Then we just hope that they, you know, we encourage supporters throughout the county, and we obviously encourage the city council members to vote for it, but it ultimately they have complete control over it at this point. But we did help them obviously craft the language that goes into it, but then they determine whether they want to, you know, present it to their city council, which they have done.
What prompted the ordinance in the first place?
Well, we try to do this, I mean, throughout the cities, through the state of Indiana, and for us in Porter County. So, you know, there is an ordinance right now in Valparaiso. So we were hoping to get, you know, eventually we would like to see one countywide. And that's what we try to do, is eventually get a countywide, you know, ordinance in place. But typically the protocol is to try to get the cities to jump on board and support it themselves before we go to the county. And so we're just trying to, you know, tackle the cities in Porter County first, the cities and the towns, I should say.
So you have a letter, the letter from the CEOs of the big health care organizations in Porter County, I think, that are in support of the policy. What difference do you think that's going to make in the outcome of the ordinance coming to fruition or not?
Well, we hope that it makes a difference. The thing is, the ordinance is supposed to support and protect all of the citizens of Portage. And so we're hoping that those organizations supporting that are our local organizations, they're the ones that see the patients come through, and they see the you know, devastating side effects that smoking, vaping was especially huge right now, affecting our youth. And so I think that it can't hurt for those hospitals to support. It can only help. And I think that having the support of our big healthcare organizations sends a message to the residents of Portage that they care about them and their health. And so if nothing else, it lets them know, hey, we're paying attention, and we really hope that you adopt this so that we can have a healthier community, because they are our healthcare providers.
Whose idea was it to get the CEOs of the healthcare systems on board?
the committee, you know, the coalition, and we talked about it as far as how do we send a message of support? You know, who might people want to hear from? And we thought possibly they would, you know, respect the organizations that we have here locally as healthcare providers enough. We all receive healthcare, and most of us receive healthcare, if not all of us, from one of those organizations. And we were hoping that that would be something that all of the residents of Portage would appreciate having support from.
Have you talked to any members of the Portage City Council that have given you any feedback or said, oh, wow, that's a big impact on me, seeing it, you know, the signatures of the CEOs of all the health hospital CEOs?
I have not talked to many this week. They had a lot of storm damage, I believe, in Portage early in the week. And so we were trying to respect the fact that they had some other issues that they were handling earlier in the week. And so I haven't gotten instant feedback from them on that just yet. You know, I think that we are just hoping that they adopt the ordinance and consider the health of all residents. We know also that evidence has shown that any businesses, I think, you know, sometimes folks are worried about some businesses that are currently allowing smoking, which there are very few. If you look at the number of businesses in the county, there are very few businesses where you can smoke at. But if you look at that, the evidence shows that those businesses will either keep their business the same or they would actually grow because they would open up their business to another about 79% of the population, because 79% of the population does not smoke. And so if those folks would open their doors to all of the residents of Portage, then they might actually increase their business. So there's no evidence that shows they will actually lose business. So we're hoping that they see the positives in that.
Playing devil's advocate here for a minute, what if a smoker were to say, well, the business is already open to non-smokers?
And they would say it's open, but the tendency for people who do not participate in that behavior, who do not smoke, they don't want to expose themselves to that air because they know it's toxic. And so most people that don't smoke don't enjoy going into places that have smoking going on in them.
What kind of places are they that allow the smoking that we're talking about?
Well, so far, the only things we know is some of the clubs and the bars, but we know that we have had feedback from at least one club that said, you know, they would consider going smoke-free. Obviously, if it was an ordinance, they would have to, but there's a lot of costs that go into a business that is a smoking, you know, approved business. So you need ventilation systems and things like that that sometimes have to get put in place to keep people safe. I mean, especially with COVID having recently been, you know, one of the biggest things that we've dealt with this past year or 18 months or so, what we look at is everyone knows that that just complicates. It's a much safer environment to go into when it's a non-smoking environment, and that negatively affects your lung health. So people are more aware of lung health, and we're hoping that with the raised awareness due to COVID that they understand that it's even more important now to offer smoke-free environments to patrons.
That's Carrie Higgins, who's the program director for the Tobacco Education and Prevention Coalition of Porter County, speaking with Lakeshore Public Radio Sharon Jackson. This proposed ordinance, which is number 2108, was brought before the Portage City Council on Tuesday, and as an update, the Ordinance Committee of the Council is going to review and revise the proposed ordinance and bring it back for review in August to allow certain businesses and membership clubs to decide on their own whether to ban smoking. A new survey from Safewise reveals that as gun sales surged in Indiana, residents in the Hoosier State are a bit on edge about gun violence. More guns have been sold in Indiana than almost any other state in 2021. That's according to the FBI reports of more than 1.1 million firearm background checks performed in Indiana so far this year. And Safewise has put out a national survey, which is called the State of Safety in America 2021. And let's find out more how Indiana ranks in that survey. We have with us from Safewise safety expert Rebecca Edwards. And Rebecca, thanks for joining us on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Thank you. I'm excited to dig into these numbers.
Well, this is a very, very interesting survey. First, tell us how it was put together. How many Americans were surveyed about their perceptions of crime and safety?
For the past 3 years, we've been conducting this survey to find out how people feel about safety and crime. And then we compare that to the reality of the stats to see if our fears line up. We speak to 5,000 Americans every single year. So it's been a total of 15,000 over the past three. And there's at least 100 in every single state represented each year.
How many Hoosiers are really, really concerned and have stated so in your work on the survey about the situation with gun violence almost every day?
Yeah, 60% of the Indiana residents that we talked to said they are highly worried. It's a top-of-mind consideration every single day when it comes to gun violence. And the national average is 53%. So they're quite a bit more concerned than the rest of the country.
Will you go down some of the other key statistics that the survey has brought out and let people know at least how in Indiana things shaped up as discovering the issues and talking about the issues of gun violence?
Yes. So overall, less than half of Indiana residents, 48%, think the state is a safe place to live. And 10% of Indiana residents told us that they or someone they know were a victim of gun violence in the last 12 months, which is higher than the national average, but it's a 70% drop year over year, which is interesting. And we also found that mass shootings in the state decreased year over year from 2019 to 2020, but so far this year, you're already over the total that happened in the state, according to the Gun Violence Archive in 2020. Mm-hmm. So we're not on a good track this year.
Seems to sound that way to be sure. how many Indiana residents have reported that when you did the questions for the survey is to say that they have firearms in their homes or their other property to protect themselves because of the concerns they have about gun violence out there?
Yeah, when it comes to protecting property, almost one in four Indiana residents say that they use a firearm to protect their property, which is pretty on par with the national average. But when it comes to personal protection, only 17% of Indiana residents say they use a concealed carry firearm. Mm-hmm. Now, this survey was conducted in the last quarter of 2020. So, and reports show that Indiana came in sixth for the most concealed carry permits issued last year. That number might be different when we ask that question this year. But nationally, 38% say they're using concealed firearms. So it's interesting that it's top of mind for Indiana, but about half as many as the rest of the country are using concealed firearms.
Mm-hmm. Well, from the information that you have together, you mentioned specifically about Indiana, but how does the survey results from Indiana rank with, say, other Midwestern states, Illinois or Michigan or Ohio, for that matter?
Well, Indiana, as I said, you know, overall, you're a lot higher than most states across the board when it comes to gun violence. I'm going to take a real quick peek. Mm-hmm. You know, Illinois is the fifth most concerned. So Illinois is more worried. And it does make a lot of sense because Chicago is in Illinois. And I know you guys are neighbors, but I think the huge surge that we've seen in major metro areas like Chicago and New York are really amping those states up as far as concern goes. But other cities or other states in the area, Ohio, you know, Michigan, they're falling on the lower end of the scale. They're just not as concerned. I'd say Illinois and Indiana are the two highest concerned states about gun violence in that area.
Since you folks with SafeWise are very concerned about safety overall, not only about gun safety or the issues that come about from gun safety possibly or other problems that can come about, but how much of the information that we happen to get every day that's in the news seems to affect people in particular here in Indiana about the issues and the problems of gun violence? We're not even, you know, perhaps not even in a community. We're even talking about in some other part of the state or some other state.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, there's a huge disconnect between how much we're worrying about crime and safety and issues like gun violence and how much they're actually happening, which is good news because, you know, 68% of people in Indiana and across the country just about think crime has been on the rise and has been consistently, where for the last three decades, crime overall has consistently trended down. So I think that the accessibility of news and headlines and information, whether we don't have to turn on news at 11 to find out what's happening in the world anymore. My mom can send me a Facebook message or I can see a string of tweets and I'm getting information a lot more ways than I used to. And having that influx in front of us all the time, it increases how much we're worrying. And I think that's across the board. And it definitely makes a difference in Indiana.
Now, do you and your colleagues at SafeWise have an opportunity, if you don't speak with others and putting the report together, you probably have a chance to confer about this. And what do you advise people who turn to you for more information about safety issues? What do you tell them about trying to deal with the issue of gun safety in particular, but gun violence as it comes about?
Yeah, when it comes to all kinds of safety, and gun violence is no exception, you know, our biggest advice is to be proactive about what you're doing. If you're worried, if there's something that you're afraid of and you're concerned about it, learn more about it. Learn how to handle it properly. And I mean, I think if you're just spending a lot of time with a lot of anxiety and doom scrolling, don't feed your brain the things that make you nervous all the time. And we had a lot of comments, open comments from people this year mentioning, I'm afraid that, like, I got a gun, but I'm afraid if I had to use it, I wouldn't know how to do it. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to, whether it's a security system, whether it's a security camera, whether it's a firearm, if you're going to use that as a form of protection, take the classes, learn how to use it, get comfortable with it, know that if you needed to defend yourself and your family, you're doing it the safest and the most proper way possible. And that's where a lot of people are afraid because of accidental shootings, obviously, are a big concern. And these are things you can be proactive about and prevent. There's a lot that you can do to not have a gun-related incident end in the worst possible way.
Rebecca Edwards is a safety expert for SafeWise, and SafeWise has just put out the results of a new survey recently conducted, checking in with more than 5,000 Americans nationwide about perceptions of crime and safety. And the latest report for Indiana shows that 60% of Hoosiers surveyed are highly concerned about gun violence every single day. Rebecca, thank you for joining us and telling us the information, and we're looking forward to another survey coming out later. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's a community garden in Indianapolis that also doubles as a safe haven. Side Effects Public Media's Farah Yousri tells us more.
On the side of a busy parkway in Indianapolis, cars speed past a flood of bright green t-shirts. It's a group of more than 40 high schoolers who gather each morning to work in a vegetable garden. The garden is the size of two basketball courts, and it brims with tomatoes, cabbage, dill weed, and fragrant mint and basil, as well as a few chickens.
None of this stuff was here in 2019. We really just started all of this stuff. Like, they teach you a lot just by working here.
Kenyatta Reed is a 17-year-old with long braided hair and a beaming smile. She's part of a youth program called the Green Team.
For me, it's really the people. This, like, I feel like a second home. It's not really just about work. Like, it's fun to be here. And you get paid to be here, so just double it for me.
The youth get paid as much as $10 an hour. Reed uses that money to help with family bills and to do some shopping for herself. Still, she feels most empowered by the skills and knowledge she learns here.
So here, actually, the marigolds and the basil are protecting the tomatoes from nematodes in the soil.
Phyllis Boyd is the executive director of Groundwork Indy, the nonprofit that has organized this summer program since 2016. She draws from history and her expertise as a botanical and environmental scientist as she teaches the youth how to grow their own food.
So Native Americans used to approach plantings in this way, where you'd have the squash that would spread on the ground and you know, crowd out the weeds. The corn would grow up, and then it would provide a structure for the beans to grow. And so you'd have these all growing together.
And she makes sure her lessons go way beyond how to pair plants and arrange a garden.
Yeah, and that's one of the things we like to do, is not just have youth involved in the hands-on, you know, like, work that's, you know, dirty and heavy, but actually have them engaged in the process of how you think and dream about spaces and how you can change them, and then work on visioning and then planning and design and then implementation. And so they get to see the whole arc of, like, how you as a person can do stuff in the world.
Granted, there's a lot of stuff that needs to be done in this neighborhood. For starters, the Green Team had to test the soil for lead contamination when they chose this spot for the garden. Lead is a toxin used in some industries and can be found in soil, old house paint, and water. This neighborhood is a hot spot for lead poisoning in children and elevated lead levels. The garden soil was no exception, but the Green Team had a solution.
You bring lead-free soil in, and you garden with that soil, and that's what you're in contact with, not the soil that's underneath.
Katie Hawthorne, a 22-year-old program supervisor, says outside of this garden, the youth aren't always given the space to try out things and find creative ways to solve problems.
You know, a lot of them are going to my high school, and I know how I struggled while I was there.
She came to the program during a college internship. She has a degree in public health and anthropology from Purdue University. And like many of the youth here, she struggled to find nurturing, safe spaces.
People not letting kids be kids, and when they say that inner city schools are run like prisons, I think that's a very serious statement.
The presence of police.
And it's just a very rigid system that doesn't allow for creativity, doesn't allow for them to make mistakes and learn from them in a valuable way.
She says for the Green Team, this is a place for hope and respite from a harsh reality. They live day in and day out. For Side Effects Public Media, I'm Farah Yusri.
Indiana is set to unveil the iLearn results later this week, and officials say the data is a key tool to gauge student learning during the pandemic. But Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jeannie Lindsay tells us that some parents question the value of the test and whether it should really be used to inform policy, especially after last school year.
Early reports of iLearn results indicate a significant drop in math and English scores. Officials say the data is an important tool to target academic supports for students. But Gary Parent Nina Burton says the way test scores are used does more harm than good, particularly for communities of color. She says she and other parents think it's time to change the system entirely.
I do hear a lot of more parents speaking of the need for that system to be revamped or just abandoned.
Others say trauma stemming from the pandemic makes social and emotional support for kids just as important as academic recovery. iLearn results go public Wednesday. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you'll be back with us tomorrow.